Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. I was looking at a book the other day and reading about the multiple levels of intelligence. And over the past few years, visionaries have moved from cognitive intelligence, which we know as IQ, to emotional intelligence, which we know as EQ. And they're now embracing spiritual intelligence, which we call SQ. So what exactly is SQ? How can it help us find new meaning in life and at work? Well, that's what business leader and founder of deepchange.com will tell us later in today's show. She'll be joining us around 12:35. But first, use it up, wear it out, make it do or do without. Our grandmothers certainly knew the importance of responsible, thrifty choices. I still remember my grandmother raising an eyebrow or two and shaking her head at what she called our wanton waste. And she'd very quickly admonish us with a sharp reminder, waste not, want not. And she never did. She never did waste and she never did want. So as we all know, things have changed considerably. We've become a nation of gross consumers. We've got the worst reputation in the world for consumptive waste. And my first guest is joining us today to help us find cheaper, greener choices for a happier, healthier life. Her new book is called Eco Thrifty. And my guest is Deborah Neiman. She's a homesteader, writer, and self-sufficiency expert. She's also the author of Homegrown and Handmade, A Practical Guide to More Self-Reliant Living. And she presents extensively on topics including soap making, bread making, cheese making, composting, and homeschooling. Very interesting stuff. Deborah Neiman, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me. It's good to be here.
Well, I want to share your journey with our listeners because you weren't always in this place. You were a journalist. You say that your favorite stories have always been political, legal, and medical because they're all about people. But there became a point at some time in your life when you were just thinking you wanted more than sharing other people's stories. So tell us how that came about for you, Deborah.
Well, when I got pregnant with my first child, I started reading about nutrition and one thing led to another, because I grew up eating canned ravioli and frozen pizza and all that kind of stuff. My mother had thought that, the food scientists were going to save everyone from the kitchen now and that cooking was old-fashioned and that we could pull something out of the freezer or open a can and eat. And she, like all of, everybody that grew up before World War II, she thought that if you could put it in your mouth and chew it and swallow it, it was good for you. And there was never any connection made between health and diet when I was growing up. But then when I got pregnant, I started reading about childbirth and nutrition and everything. And I started to see a lot of people talking about a connection between diet and your health. And so I started to wonder that maybe the reason I had been sick all the time as a child was because I didn't have the greatest diet. So I started reading labels and started changing what we did. One of the first labels that I read was a blueberry muffin mix, and I saw that it didn't have any blueberries in it. But it did have lots of things I couldn't pronounce.
Right. So you go from this reporting on this medical, I mean, you've been on all kinds of shows. I read Oprah 2020, Good Morning America reporting. And was this like a whole lifestyle change for you? And did it happen overnight or did it happen very gradually?
It was very gradual because it was, I got pregnant with my first child 25 years ago. And at that point, I was, eating lots of fast food still and frozen foods and things like that. And my idea of veal parmesan was to buy the frozen breaded supposed veal patty from the store, put canned sauce on it, and put shredded cheese on it. And I felt like I was making a really classy meal by doing that. And everything was coming from a freezer or a jar from the store. And putting lots of garbage into the landfill and everything. And so it was very gradual, like, you know, maybe I don't want to eat veal. Maybe I would want to cook from scratch, you know, with the meat that I'm getting. Like, just buy the meat instead of this thing that says that it's a veal
instead of the thing
patty.
That says it's a patty.
Yeah, and has, you know, but it's perfectly round, and it's got an ingredient list and a couple inches long. So it was very gradual over, you know, the years. And then in the early 90s, so like about 15, 20 years ago, we started talking about taking it a step farther. Because at that point, we were eating more natural foods, we were eating organic foods, and we started saying, wow, wouldn't it be cool if we could grow more of our own foods? And we started talking about moving to the country. And then 10 years ago, we did move to the country and start growing things organically ourselves. So it's been very gradual, and it's the kind of thing that at the time I thought we had to move to the country to take that next step, but when I was writing my first book, Homegrown and Handmade, I interviewed lots of people who didn't do that. You know, they started growing their own food on a rooftop in Chicago or in a backyard in Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah, so, I have a friend down in Tacoma who does it. A few weeks ago on the news down there, they said that they just extended the number of chickens you can keep in your backyard now. They changed the ordinance a little. So my guess is that more and more people are becoming more involved in self-subsistence there.
Yes. People have always, for the last 20 years, people always thought I was weird. First, they thought I was weird 25 years ago when, you know, we started talking about cutting meat out of our diet, and then we became vegetarians, and then we started eating this organic food, which back then people didn't even know what organic food was. Somebody said to me one time, well, all food is organic, meaning, you know, live. It came from a living source. And I was trying to explain to them that organic meant it was grown without chemicals. People really thought we'd lost it 10 years ago when we said we were moving to the country.
Right.
But starting about 5-6 years ago, I started to see this shift to where when people would find out about my lifestyle, instead of looking at me kind of cross-eyed and trying to change the subject, they started going, oh, that's cool.
Well, you were influenced on your website. You say you were influenced by Margaret Mead, a comment by Margaret Mead when she said that, you know, small groups of people can make a huge difference. And also there's this, you know, starting to live the adventure, the romance behind the Henry David Thoreau, who, you know, in Walden. And you actually did move your family out to your 32 acres in the middle of Illinois. Is that where you're still at now?
Yes, we are. We're still here.
Mm, wonderful. And you grow now how much? I read that you were producing 100% of your own meat, eggs, dairy product. Is that still
yes.
true? Wow.
Yep, we still do.
Now, do you...
Yeah, and I'm even more committed to that now. I mean, because we were vegetarians for 14 years before we moved out here, and we didn't have any plans to change that. But, well, if you've got chickens, they have babies. Half of them are boys, and then they start to fight, and you've got to figure out what to do with them. So we started reluctantly eating the meat that was grown here. But living out here, though, I mean, getting as involved in the research and everything behind the food industry, there is no way that I would eat commercially grown meat now.
Right, right. Well, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about some of the ideas in your book. And I particularly want to address a study that recently came out from Stanford University, made all the headlines about, you know, why organic products aren't any better nutritionally for you than regular products. But what they didn't say, there was a whole bunch of stuff they didn't say behind that study. And I'd like to address that when we come back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Deborah Neiman. Her book is called Eco Thrifty, Cheaper, Greener Choices for Happier, Healthier Life.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Disease Foundation. Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
You've heard of acid reflux, but what about silent reflux? According to Dr. Jamie Kaufman, of the 125 million people who suffer from acid reflux, 18% have airway or silent reflux. Symptoms include asthma, sinusitis, hoarseness, throat clearing, shortness of breath, and sleep apnea. Join us next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair to learn important information about airway reflux, how it can seriously damage your health, and how you can prevent it. Dr. Jamie Kaufman is an internationally renowned pioneer in integrated aerodigestive medicine and a leading world expert on airway reflux. Join us next week at noon Pacific and send your questions for Dr. Kaufman to info@conversationslive.net.
Conversations Live has a new Facebook page, and we'd love you to join us there. Click on Like to join our page, and you can share a link to your business or event, or share a few words about yourself and what's happening in your world. You can even recommend future guests or topics. We're easy to find. Just search for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair Facebook, log in, and leave a post. Look forward to meeting you there.
Get your smile on with Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. We're talking about being eco-thrifty in this segment. My guest wants you to live cheaper, greener, happier, and healthier lives. And her new book is called Eco-Thrifty. And I wanted to talk a little bit, Deborah, about the study that came out a couple of weeks ago, Stanford University. They questioned the nutritional benefits of buying organic foods and basically said that they found very little nutritional difference between organic and conventional produce and meat. And that's what was reported by all of the news stations around. But there's a whole bunch of other stuff in that report that they didn't report on, such as the use of pesticides, and they overlooked several things. But let's talk a little bit about that, because you said there was, I found a really interesting article on Dr. Oz by Dr. Alan Green with some really, arguments against this Stanford study and everything from, the pesticides to antibiotic-resistant bacteria that's brought into the home on non-organic foods. But tell us about the article you saw in the New York Times, you said?
Right, yes. Because the Stanford study just looked at one single thing, and food is way more than just one single thing. Because when I was a little girl eating all that frozen food and stuff, my mom was giving me Pals vitamins every single day, and she thought that was going to be good for me. And it probably was. I may have been even sicker without the added vitamins, but food is so much more than simply a list of vitamins. And that was one of the analogy that the New York Times article that's like saying, by the standards of that study, Frosted Flakes is a more nutritious choice than an apple because it's got more nutrients in it.
So, how ridiculous.
You're not comparing all the things you need to compare when you just focus on one little thing.
Right.
And there is research actually that shows that organic produce is healthier because actually a study I quote in Eco-Thrifty out of Harvard said that food that is grown in nutrient-rich soil does have more nutrients in it than food that's grown in dead soil, which is the case in a lot of commercial soil. They pump it full of nitrates and stuff to make things grow.
Right, right.
But just because it's growing big doesn't mean it's getting full of nutrients. And in Tomato Land by Barry Estabrook, he talks about how the nutrition of a supermarket tomato is so much lower today than a tomato 30 years ago.
Yeah, not to mention there's little to no flavor in them either.
Right.
One of the things that Dr. Alan Green talked about in his article, why going organic does matter for your family. He said that there was a study done on suburban Seattle children. Of course, we're here in Seattle. They had their urine tested multiple times for evidence of organophosphate pesticides. It was present in all samples at levels way above those set by the EPA as a safe level. Then the children were switched to mostly organic food. The pesticides disappeared practically immediately. They were virtually undetectable in morning and evening urine samples for 5 days. Then the children were switched back to their typical suburban non-organic diet, and the levels shot right back up.
Yes.
It's quite shocking.
Right, but it's not terribly surprising. You know, if when you put something into your body has to deal with that. And it's not particularly good for your kidney and your liver and all that to have to process all of those chemicals and stuff.
Right. Now, your book is largely about seeing the bigger picture. Hey, there are better ways to do things, cheaper ways to do things, more environmentally friendly way to do things, and they're all pretty simple.
Yep.
So another study article I read, this was shocking to me. You talk a lot about food waste and how, you know, food waste is eating up billions, according to this editorial I saw in the reporterherald.com. 40% of the food in the United States is wasted. Yep. That translates to $40 billion a year in losses just for households and $90 billion overall. $90 billion a year in wasted food when there are so many people going hungry. In fact, people in our own country are still going hungry. So
yep.
where do you come from on food and food waste in your book?
Well, basically, one of the important things I think when it comes to wasting food is that you have to carefully look at what you want to eat and just buy the food that you want to eat. So, you know, don't buy something because, you know, don't read my book or any book and go crazy and say, oh, I'm going to buy all this really nutritious food and go stock up on everything and then bring it home and just let it sit there until it rots. You know, start small when you're making changes and buy things that you know you like. And then branch out from there, you know. I had a 20-year journey to get to where I am today. And, you know, that's the way it has to happen, unfortunately. We're creatures of habit. We can't just flip a switch and tomorrow be doing everything a perfectly healthy way.
Right. But it's not, you know, sometimes like people like me, you know, and I've got several friends in the same boat that cook mostly for themselves. They may have spouses that are on the road or kids that have grown. And they were like, well, it's not worth cooking for myself. It's cheaper to go out. But it's not necessarily so, is it?
Oh, no. It's definitely not cheaper to go out. You can make a fried egg with an English muffin for breakfast for about one-fourth of what you would get that for going through a drive-thru. There are lots of things you can do for a single person. As my children have grown up and flown the coop, there are a lot of times when I'm home alone. And, you know, it only takes 15 minutes to throw a piece of fish on the grill or into a skillet. I mean, it's like 5 minutes each side, and fish is done. And about during that same time, you can be steaming whatever vegetable you want. And, you know, for 15 minutes start to finish, you've got a really nutritious meal that you can eat. And you will spend more than 15 minutes from the time that you get out of your car, go into a restaurant, wait to get served, wait to pay your bill, you know. Or even, I've seen 7 or 8 cars at the drive-thru in a lot of fast food restaurants. Those people are wasting a lot of time just sitting in their car waiting for food.
Now, what about personal care products? I mean, you have a lot of information in the book. From personal care products to health and fitness, food, clothing, babies,
yes.
Appliances, gardening, entertaining. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in here, a lot of information in here. Do you make all of your personal care products now?
Yes, I do. And it's not even always necessarily a matter of making them. I mean, I do make my own things like my own soap and stuff, but a lot of times, like if you have dry skin, something like olive oil or sunflower oil works just as well as a $40 an ounce cream. And, you know, you can put a couple drops of essential oil in it to make it smell however you want to. And again, that was one of those things that I started doing because I had problems with allergies and contact dermatitis. And so I had to learn how to do all of this. But it's really not complicated. And I think that's one of the things I wanted to do with this book was to make people see how simple it can be.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, because I know a lot of our listeners don't like using deodorant, antiperspirant, because of the aluminum. You have a little section on deodorant and antiperspirant. Have you found an effective one? Because I've tried several, and I've just gone back to my old one.
There's a number of different things. Basically, what you need to do is either change the pH under your arm so that it's not friendly, because that odor comes from bacteria.
Right.
So you either change the pH under your arm so that it doesn't provide a good breeding ground for bacteria. Some people use baking soda. Some people go the other route and use vinegar. But either one of those will change the pH to either higher or lower than where the bacteria is going to grow. You can also use alcohol, which just kills the bacteria. And one of the things that I found is that if you exercise on a daily basis and make yourself really sweat, that I don't know what it is. It just flushes everything out of your system or something.
There you go.
But I don't have a problem with underarm deodorant in the middle of summer when I am out there working like crazy and sweating like crazy. You would think that you would have problems, but I actually have more trouble in the middle of winter when I'm just sitting here totally sedentary at my computer.
So good,
I think
good
we need to sweat more.
We probably do, because, I mean, we were made to sweat, weren't we?
Right, yeah.
Well, we're almost at the end of our segment. You have got so much great information in this book. What's the number one thing when you're going around talking to people that they ask you about?
Mostly about, I think, their time. A lot of people have been sold this bill of goods that my time is too valuable to do something that I could just pay for. And the reality is that your time is worth exactly the amount of money that somebody is willing to pay you this minute. If somebody is willing to pay you right this minute to do something, then do it. Get paid. But most people are not being paid in the evening to sit there and watch TV or to sit in line at a fast food place to get their food or whatever. So just forget the idea that your time is worth anything more than what you are being paid at that moment.
Right.
Because if you flip it around, then you start saying, well, how much money am I saving? You know, I sit there and a lot of times I love to run the numbers on this, and it's like, whoa, I just made $30 an hour by making that dessert.
There you go. There you go. It's just a case of reframing. And you've got lots of really great information in here on saving money on birthdays and books and all kinds of stuff. So I appreciate you being with us today, Deborah. Final,
thanks,
very quick thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today.
Well, if you'd like to get more of this right away, you could check my website, thriftyhomesteader.com. And there's actually an article up there that just went up today, written by my daughter who moved to the city of Chicago and learned to live without a car.
Fantastic. There you go.
All
right. Thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Deborah's book again, Deborah Neiman, her book is called Eco Thrifty, Cheaper, Greener Choices for a Happier, Healthier Life. Please do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Whoa. Oh, mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be now.
Hi, I'm Charlize Theron with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Almost all the puppies for sale at your local mall were churned out by breeding facilities called puppy mills.
Constant confinement drives the dogs mad. They are impregnated continually until they can no longer produce a litter.
If you choose a dog from the mall, a dog you could have saved from the pound will die.
Contact PETA to learn how you can make a difference at 757-622-PETA or visit PETA.org.
Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Conscious Living for Conscious People. Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And a couple of quick shout-outs before we bring on our next guest and talk about the 21 Skills of Spiritual Intelligence to help us live better lives, bring more meaning into our life and work. First one, I want to announce, remind everyone the Tacoma Film Festival is still running. It runs through October 11th, which is Thursday. All of the information you can find down at thegrandcinema.com, grandcinema.com. Eric, you're down that way. We got tickets to go down. Did you see anything you liked at the weekend?
I did. Actually, Friday I saw a movie called Dead Dad that made its West Coast premiere, I believe, at the Tacoma Film Festival. And kind of a low-budget film, but very well done. And the director and writer of the movie was there in attendance. So that was nice to get some real insight on the filmmaking process right afterwards. So enjoyed that quite a bit.
Yeah, I think that's one of the nicest things is having the director or somebody who's in the film there afterwards and they get their little talk. But I went down yesterday to see one documentary called New York Showcase about a group of kids trying to get an agent as they graduate from school for Broadway theater. And I enjoyed it so much that I thought, oh, I wonder if I could squeeze another one in because I was supposed to be working. Yes, well, I did work, but it just got delayed a little. And so I ended up going to see another documentary at the Grand Cinema itself, which is just the cutest, oldest cinema around, I think.
Great little indie film theater.
It is, but they've refurbished it also. It's really comfortable in there. But anyway, I went to see another documentary called Cartoon College. Did you know there was a college for cartoonists?
I did not. Kind of wish I'd seen this one.
Yeah, it was only about 22 people a year that go through this program. But it was really interesting just to see their journey. And then they had one of the girls there who'd gone through college. And she was talking after the film, you know, about how realistic is that you're going to make money as a cartoonist, you know. But it was very interesting. It was quite, and I also saw a short that showed with it.
Well, that's one thing I really like about the Tacoma Film Festival is they generally will pair a short film with a feature film. So you kind of get your money's worth there, getting two films for the price of one. Yeah. I think is very cool.
Yeah, I enjoyed it very much. But then, unfortunately, I did have to go home to work.
Well, there's always tonight, tomorrow, and Wednesday.
Right, through Thursday, through Thursday. And again, you can find out more at grandcinema.com if you're interested in going down. And one other thing I wanted to mention quickly before we bring on our next guest, Cindy Wigglesworth, is that Karen Brown, do you remember Karen Brown, Eric, who was here with us in August?
Yes.
Wonderful young woman. I was so impressed with her. I've met her several times and I've been impressed with her every time I've met her. She was kind of, what do I want to do? I went to chef school, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, long story short, you can go to our website, conversationslive.net, and listen to the interview if you want to hear her full journey. But long story short, she's become a food entrepreneur, and she's very well known up in this area and down in Oregon, you know, the Northwest entirely. She's got a great event coming up on October 22nd at 6 p.m., with Foodportunity. That's the name of her company, foodportunity.com. And it's a networking event that brings the entire food community together. So it might be food journalists, public relations professionals, restaurateurs, farmers, companies who sell food, who create food, and people who are basically passionate about food. Anyway, that event is coming up October 22nd, as I said, 6 p.m. You can get early bird tickets for that at brownpapertickets.com. But just go to foodportunity.com if you want to learn more about that. And then I think we'll go to break because we need to call our next guest, don't we? So we'll go to break right now and we'll be back in just a moment. I was wondering there if I could squeeze something else in.
This is kissing man like a long walk home when the music stops. Take it to find me, took it to the park when you're on your own. It's a long walk home. Well, if they follow you, don't look back. Like Dylan in the movies.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do. but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
You've heard of acid reflux, but what about silent reflux? According to Dr. Jamie Kaufman, of the 125 million people who suffer from acid reflux, 18% have airway or silent reflux. Symptoms include asthma, sinusitis, hoarseness, throat clearing, shortness of breath, and sleep apnea. Join us next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair to learn important information about airway reflux, how it can seriously damage your health, and how you can prevent it. Dr. Jamie Kaufman is an internationally renowned pioneer in integrated aerodigestive medicine and a leading world expert on airway reflux. Join us next week at noon Pacific and send your questions for Dr. Kaufman to info@conversationslive.net.
The new mainstream of talk radio. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Cindy Wigglesworth is my next guest. She founded Deep Change more than 12 years ago after 20 years in human resources management with ExxonMobil. She's on the working council of a Tyson Center for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace at the University of Arkansas, and has served on the board for the International Center for Spirit at Work. Her new book is called SQ21, The 21 Skills of Spiritual Intelligence. Cindy Wigglesworth, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Vicki. It's great to be here.
Well, I have to say, what a great last name you have, Wigglesworth, for, you know, before we go anywhere else.
I know. Only the English could have created a name like that.
I know. I thought, now there's a good old Anglo-Saxon name. And I looked it up, and it dates back to the 7th century.
Yes, it goes back quite a way. I've actually visited the town of Wigglesworth.
You have?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's interesting. So you've got a very interesting background too, and I want to just share some of that with our listeners before we start talking about the book that you put together, because it's relevant to your journey is relevant to the material that's in your book.
Mm-hmm.
You were raised Roman Catholic. You were raised to love your neighbor as you love yourself, but you said that seemed impossible for you, and asked yourself, how can an ordinary person like me learn to stop being impatient, judgmental, and occasionally cranky, and how can I love other people who are unreasonable and cranky? So tell us a little bit about your journey.
Yes. So I took that message very much to heart. It was something I wanted to do. But what I found, at least in the churches that I attended, that there was no real practical advice on how to do that. You know, you're just told you have to do it, and you're supposed to go to confession when you fail to do it. But the how part was really missing for me. So I became very intrigued by things that might help me move in that direction. And, you know, through a series of efforts of reading and going to workshops, I slowly started uncovering tools that would work for me, that would help me forgive people when I was upset, that would help me shift out of my ego and get to a higher place. And over time, I found I had gotten really frustrated by trying to figure out what workshop I needed next. Was wishing there was like the guidebook. Somebody would point me in the direction of here's the things you need to learn. And long story short, I ended up eventually deciding it didn't exist, so I would do the research and try to create one.
Yeah. And that's not too, far stretch of an imagination, because, as I said, you spent 20 years in human resources management. You have a solid background in leadership and managing. So I'm guessing this was really a fairly organic next step for you.
Yes, I'm very logical and linear as a thinker, and I like logical linear things. I understood what IQ was. Daniel Goleman and Richard Boyatzis came out with their fabulous emotional intelligence work, which listed 18 skills. And I thought, gosh, you know, if these guys can write a roadmap to teach why emotions matter to engineers, then surely somebody can, you know, write something about why this spiritual stuff is so useful, because I had found that it had changed my leadership style drastically and for the better.
Right. Let's talk, if we can, just a little about emotional intelligence, because there is a correlation there. You see spiritual intelligence as the next level up. So I think we need to have a better understanding. I think most people do have a grasp of emotional intelligence means, but if you could just explain that for us in relationship to the work you've done.
Sure. So the 18 skills of emotional intelligence includes, among them, can I name the emotion that I'm having right now and understand what triggered it, or emotional self-awareness? Do I have empathy with your emotions? So do I know when I'm angry? Can I have empathy and understanding with you when you're angry? Do I manage my anger well? And do I put all of that together so that I can be a good communicator, an influencer, handle conflict, and so on? So the end result is good social skills.
Right. Go ahead, sorry.
I like to think that SQ is kind of like EQ on steroids. If you learn how to name your anger and you can manage it so that you don't hit people, which is a great beginning, that's really good. SQ takes it to the next level where you deeply investigate what is triggering and what are the underlying beliefs and change how you see things so that the anger doesn't arise with that trigger anymore. So it's a significant shift from managing your anger to getting rid of your anger.
Right. So tell us how you began the journey of putting this together. You looked at leaders, spiritual leaders that were out there, such as Mother Teresa, Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King. You looked at leaders like that and determined what qualities they had in common.
Yes, I was looking to see what did they have in common and what was different from the emotional intelligence skills that had already been described, because my basic belief was is that there would be some set of skills beyond EQ. As wonderful as EQ is, and I'm a huge fan of it, it was the first step in this process of being a kinder, gentler, more loving person in the world. So what's the next step? And I started looking for the themes, and over time, with a lot of effort, emerged these 21 skills.
And would you just share some of those 21 skills, just high level, name them off?
Sure. One of them is, are you aware that you have an ego self and a higher self? And can you hear the difference between the voice of the fearful, angry, contracted ego versus the relaxed and expansive and wiser, more compassionate higher self? When you're aware of those two voices, you can then move into the skill of living from your higher self, or keeping your higher self in charge. And you can have the end result, the fourth quadrant skills, include things like being able to make compassionate and wise decisions, being a calming and healing presence in the world, and being aligned with the ebb and flow of life.
Mm. And you just mentioned the four quadrants, and we should explain here that you divide those 21 skills into four quadrants: know thyself, know the world, self-mastery, and social mastery and spiritual presence.
Yes.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say they vertically stack straight on top of the Goleman-Boyatzis model.
There we go. Yeah, I'm having a little delay, I think, sometimes when you finish talking here. So why don't we take a quick break? And then when I come back, I want to ask you how we can increase our spiritual intelligence. And I don't want to have to interrupt us with a break there. So we'll go to break now. We'll be right back. You'll listen to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest in this segment is Cindy Wigglesworth. Her book is called SQ21, The 21 Skills of Spiritual Intelligence.
Women worldwide see beauty in their mothers, sisters, daughters, and friends. However, only 4% of those women see the same beauty in themselves. Hi, I'm Lisa Ling, and I've traveled the world for years and have witnessed firsthand the devastating effects of low self-esteem among women. We should all pledge to inspire the next generation to see their beauty as a source of confidence, not anxiety.
This message was brought to you by the Alliance for Women in Media and was made possible through the generous support of the Dove Movement for Self-Esteem. To learn more, visit DoveMovement.com.
OMG!
O-M-G. Grammar abuses, no, LOL. Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
Conversations Live has a new Facebook page, and we'd love you to join us there. Click on Like to join our page, and you can share a link to your business or event, or share a few words about yourself and what's happening in your world. You can even recommend future guests or topics. We're easy to find. Just search for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair Facebook, log in, and leave a post. Look forward to meeting you there.
Radio for your body, mind, and spirit. Alternative Talk, 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and my guest is Cindy Wigglesworth. She's a 20-year veteran with ExxonMobil. She's worked in human resources management. She's had her own company for the past 12 years called DeepChange.com. And her new book is called SQ21, The 21 Skills of Spiritual Intelligence. And I just want to share this quote with you, which is in the front of the book by Henri Bergson from Creative Evolution. It says, "To exist is to change. To change is to mature. To mature is to go on creating oneself endlessly." I love that, Cindy.
Oh, thank you. Well, I sure hope we keep growing and maturing. And, you know, we see evidence of nobility in the human species. It's easy to point to what's broken, but it's wonderful to focus on the things that are exemplary.
Yeah. And ultimately, you know, we owe it to ourselves to keep growing, because if we don't, then, you know, the alternative is we're stuck, right?
Yes, and, you know, that's where the joy comes from. There is a place that we can move to of expanded self and expanded maturity from which life is just better, you know?
Right. Yeah. So I want to look at how we can develop our spiritual intelligence. And one of the things I want to look at in particular is how we recognize the voice of our higher self. What does that sound like?
It's a contrast, because the ego voice, the one that's loud and noisy that we're used to listening to, is agitated, fearful, angry, and it has a very sort of rushed and sort of contracted feeling to it. So in your body, you will feel muscle tightness, muscle contraction. When I am able to calm my body and really listen to my higher self, what I feel is a different mental state. It's a calmer mental state. There's more clarity in my mind. My emotional state tends to be peaceful and calm, and my body is different. My muscles are more relaxed. So I look for those three things to clue me in.
Right. And you give a very simple 9-step process to shift from our ego self to our higher self. Stop, breathe, ask for help, observe yourself, identify and embrace ego concerns, look deeply for root causes, reframe, focus, and choose a spiritually intelligent response. So what do you say to people who say, "I just can't help myself"? Because you know they're up there.
Well, of course, and we all have this habituated way of interacting with the world until we choose otherwise. So you can't help yourself unless you choose to help yourself. So if you want it to be true that you can't change, that will be true. But if you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, and if you're tired of being angry and unhappy and upset, then it's time to consider, let's just treat it as a hypothesis. Maybe the spiritual intelligence stuff works. Maybe if I insert a pause between the stimulus and the response and a listen for a higher voice, I'll be happier with the outcomes.
Right. We are so intolerant as a nation, not just as a nation, but as a world culture, I think. We're so intolerant of other people's perspectives. You'd think we would become more tolerant as we became more integrated, but it seems we're getting less tolerant, and we're so worried about being PC that, you know, that kind of almost fuels the less tolerance, I think, on some levels. How does this help us to understand people with very different points of view?
One of the skills in here is skill 7, understanding the worldviews of others. And this really requires the development of some humility to see that from any person's perspective, their behavior inherently makes sense, or they wouldn't be doing it. So one of the exercises we do in class is we talk about why might you personally, do that behavior. And the ego rears up and says, I would never do that. And then we just work with that. We say, okay, this is just a thought exercise. Calm down. What would be the life conditions that would be existing for you? What would be your mental health state? What would be your culture? What would be your childhood in order for you to think this is a good idea? And that begins to soften our prejudgments about other people.
And you talk about sustaining faith during challenging times. What does faith mean to you, first of all, and how do we sustain it during challenging times? Because, you know, we are experiencing challenging times, and yes, our perspective, you know, can alter that somewhat. But how do you define faith, first of all?
Well, one of the things this tool is very clear about is I don't make people use specific language. So for me, I have an ultimate faith in a higher power, in life with a capital L, that the universe is intentional and loving and brilliant, and I don't have to be smart enough to understand it. I just can perceive that there is something really cool going on here by whatever name. So people will have different names for their higher power. By whatever name, I need to have an ongoing relationship with that. So if you would say your higher power is Jesus or your higher power is God or it's life, I establish an ongoing relationship with life so that when I'm having a difficult moment, I can remember with gratitude those moments when I had bliss moments of being out in nature and experiencing the awe and wonder of the universe, and the humility to surrender to things I can't control. Even though I might not see any purpose in it, I trust that something good can be made out of this in the long term, and I just hang on to that trust. It's optimism by choice.
Right. There's a great line when you were just talking about that I was reminded of in the film Shirley Valentine. It's an English comedy film which has been around, gosh, for 20 plus years, I think. But she's a housewife who's taken for granted by everybody, is bored with everything, is invisible to her husband and her kids, and she decides to go to Greece. And she actually stays in Greece, but she says to the camera, she's having this conversation with the camera all the time, I'm in love. I'm in love with life. And it was really the first time that this had happened to her. So our choices can definitely influence the way that we're living our lives.
Yes, and gratitude practices of any kind are so helpful.
Yes, I do a gratitude meditation every morning, and it does definitely make a difference, because if you are focusing on gratitude, the negative stuff flips away.
Yes.
Can you tell me about a time in your life that was, we all have significant turning points in life, that was particularly challenging for you, and how you overcame that?
Well, there have been quite a few, so let me just pick one. In one of these turning point moments, I was actually already doing this work, and several things converged in the same year with very painful consequences to the point where I felt like my coping mechanisms had collapsed. And I was trying all the tools that I normally teach, and they weren't working for me. And I just got in bed, curled up in the fetal position one night, and just prayed. And I said, you know there is another way to see this. I am not going to give up until I find another way to see this story. And one of the ways we talk about seeing a new story is like you tell a different story about it. Even if the story is not true, it has the potential that maybe it is, and it shifts you. And a story hit me that was like, oh, my God, this thing that I thought was so awful has this precious jewel in the middle of it that I wasn't seeing. And while I was still horribly sad about what was going on, once I saw the jewel, it was like, okay, I can get through it now.
Yeah, it just needs sometimes that perception shift, paradigm shift. You've been in the workplace for 30 years now, in the workforce for 30 years. A very different place today to when you started out. You know, so many people are returning to the work for the first time or taking on different jobs for the first time. What advice do you give to them? How does this work help in that situation?
Work working on this spiritual intelligence content has personal benefit regardless of what kind of a work environment you're in. Every work environment has stress. Every work environment has people in it that you may not like. If you can learn to make this a practice to shift from ego to higher self, to build the muscle on a daily basis like you would go to the gym, then when difficult days hit at work or at home, you'll be able to shift perspective to say, okay, this isn't all high drama. I don't have to lose my peace over this. There is a way that I can see this and behave in a way that I will feel like my higher self showed up today. I'll be proud of myself when I go home.
Right, right. You share three exercises at the back of the book. One of them is practicing gratitude. Mm-hmm. Another is asking a guided question. Give us an example of how asking a guided question can help lead us to higher spiritual intelligence.
I love having a question that guides my life, and it sort of distills my philosophy into a moment where when I can't think of anything else, I can remember my guiding question. My guiding question is, what would love do? My commitment is to show up as the most loving person I can be, specifically defining that as compassionate, wise, and peaceful. So, in other words, it's my shortcut for spiritual intelligence. What would love do in this situation? Love would be kind to the other person, but love would also be kind to me. And sometimes the loving thing to do is to set a really forceful boundary with someone else. So I find that question helps me drop into a different space in my mind and heart and in my body, and then speak not with an angry edge, but with a tone of voice that's clear and loving. And if I need to set boundaries, people get it, that mm-hmm. my no means no.
Right, right. And this is an ongoing practice, I would assume. This is not something we're ever going to, like, completely master. We're human beings.
No, we are human. And, you know, you might be really great on one day and the next day not so good. I look at it like going to the gym. You know, I go to the gym 3 times a week. But when I'm traveling, sometimes I skip a few days. Well, I can feel that when I'm not doing my personal physical practices. I can feel it when I'm not doing my spiritual practices. So it's a muscle that we need to maintain, and we need to understand we're going to have better days and worse days, and we need to be kind with ourselves. Part of being loving means being loving to yourself, too.
Right. There's lots of really great information in this book, and as you know, we said at the beginning of the segment, the input was based on great spiritual leaders out there, and you took all of that and analyzed it and came up with SQ21, the 21 Skills of Spiritual Intelligence. We're at the end of our segment, Cindy, but I want to ask you what you'd like to leave our listeners with today.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like them to know that they are lovable and capable of being loving, and to go forth and have faith that all is going to work out somehow down the road.
Mm. And I read that if they order a copy of the book, anybody on the website orders a copy of your book tomorrow, there's a free gift. So would you give out your website for anybody who wants to find out more?
Sure. The book site is www.sq21book.com. That's sq21book.com. If you order tomorrow, October 9th, Tuesday, October 9th, you get a free partial spiritual intelligence assessment, and the details are all on that website.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate you being with us today.
Thanks, Vicki.
I guess there's Cindy Wigglesworth, SQ21, the 21 Skills of Spiritual Intelligence. I was trying to say 21 and Cindy together, and it didn't come out. But you can find out more at the website she just gave to you. And if you missed that, you can find it on our website at conversationslive.net. And I want to thank all of you for being with us today. Appreciate your time. Appreciate you spending this hour with us. And don't forget that if you are down a South Sound way, that the Tacoma Film Festival runs through Thursday, October 11th. And judging by the 3 films I saw yesterday, 2 documentaries and a short 10-minute film. The standard of film down there is really good. And you get to vote on your favorite film, so you get to choose the winners there. Tomorrow I'm interviewing Dr. Lynn Hartman. She's a professor of oncology and the director of education at the Mayo Clinic. They've produced a fantastic book that they call A Lifeline for Navigating Breast Cancer, and we're going to bring that interview to you later this month. So stay tuned every Monday at noon for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Appreciate you being with us. We'll be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.